You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Cortman Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Glad to have you listening in for our Wednesday show, whether it's your first time listening to the podcast or you're a regular listener. Glad to have you listening in. Jam-packed show coming your way. I'll be answering your questions in our latest Locked On Seahawks mailbag, plus taking a look at the receiver depth chart following the draft and the Seahawks rookie minicamp. Make sure to check out Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Earlier this month, the Seahawks rejected Rashad Penny's fifth-year option. This was not a surprise. The former first-round pick out of San Diego State has really struggled. In particular, he's battled a bunch of injuries in his first three seasons with the Seahawks, has yet to hit 1,000 career rushing yards, only appeared in three games last year coming off of a torn ACL, and he was relatively ineffective in those three games. So he became the fourth player since 2011 to not have his option picked up by general manager John Schneider. Schneider has yet to actually sign on for a fifth-year option on a first-round pick since the new CBA came out in 2011. He passed on the opportunity to do so with James Carpenter. He passed on the chance to do it with Bruce Irvin. Most recently, Jermaine Ifedi before the 2020 season. They did not give him his fifth-year option as well. He ended up signing with the Chicago Bears, and now Rashad Penny is going to hit free agency next March after his fourth season with the Seahawks. It honestly is pretty easy to see why John Schneider to this point has opted against paying more money to retain all of the players that I just mentioned on a fifth-year deal. They're going to get a major pay bump, and quite frankly, none of those players, even guys like Bruce Irvin that were key contributors on Super Bowl teams, weren't big-time stars. They weren't the kind of players that you were going to be giving a 75-80% pay raise to compared to their first three seasons. The Seahawks could just not justify that, and it's especially true for a player like Rashad Penny, who has not come close to meeting expectations in large part because he simply has not been able to stay healthy. Those first three players I mentioned did not come back with the fifth year with the team and left in free agency. Maybe Penny goes down that path next year as well. He's going to have one last crack here to really try to get his career going after battling a bunch of injuries the last couple of seasons. Chris Carson's had some of his own injury issues. So I expect the Seahawks are still going to give Rashad Penny plenty of opportunities as the backup running back, a complimentary weapon out of the backfield. But it's going to be difficult for him to be able to earn that fifth year with the Seahawks, and he might not have a ton of interest out there in free agency either. This has created frustration for fans because the fact is the Seahawks have not been able to hit any home runs in the first round over the last 5 or 6 years. They have not been able to add a big-time talent. Now, they've had some good draft picks in later rounds, but the fact is that the team has just not been able to make strong selections in the first round. But if you're looking for a silver lining here, another fact, a lot of teams are not using this fifth-year option. It's far from the Seahawks being the only team not using these to try to keep their first-round picks around, particularly for the teams that are picking in the bottom third of the first round. And when you look at the Seahawks compared to the rest of the NFC West, it's pretty easy to see why they aren't using these fifth-year options when you consider the types of players that are available at the spots they are picking at compared to the rest of the division. 2011 to 2018, the Rams' average draft position was 11.5. The Cardinals, it was 13. 49ers, 17.5. The Seahawks are way down near the bottom of the league. Their median draft slot during that time period was pick 26. It's really one of the big downsides. I guess if you're looking for a downside of consistently having a winning football team that makes the playoffs, you pick late in the first round. And John Schneider has loved either trading out of the first round completely or trading down. They've only used their native first round pick once since 2011, and that was in the 2020 draft when they picked Jordan Brooks. And everyone was stunned because John Schneider is typically at least traded down one time or traded out of the first round completely. So they have consistently been much further in the first round on the draft order than the other three teams in the NFC West. And you can't use that as an excuse. There's still some really good players available there. And if you look at some of the draft picks they have made that haven't panned out, there were other players that have had much better NFL careers that were still on the board that they opted not to select. Hindsight is whatever in these cases. But the Seahawks have had opportunities to bring in other players, and they ended up making decisions that did not pan out, or the players just simply didn't live up to their first-round billing. But this is why making decisions like John Schneider did last year, trading two first-round picks for a player like Jamal Adams, makes a lot of sense, because they were not going to get a player of that caliber at pick 25 or pick 27 or anytime late in the first round. They probably weren't going to be getting a marquee talent like Jamal Adams that's going to be a top five, top six pick in most NFL drafts. And so you're going to be willing to give up those types of picks. When you look at the track record, you're thinking, we're probably not going to get anything close to that caliber of a player, so why not move a couple first-round picks and bring in a premium talent that we know can help us win right now? And you're seeing a lot of other teams that are doing that. The Rams traded for Jalen Ramsey, gave up a couple first-round picks. They just gave up a couple first-rounders to get Matthew Stafford, the quarterback from the Lions. And you're seeing several other teams that are willing to give up their mid to late first-round picks so they could bring in proven talents that can help them win now. So this is not just a Seahawks trend. There are a lot of teams that are consistently making the postseason that are making similar moves, and it looks like that trend is going to continue when you consider how many of these first-round picks are not getting that fifth-year option, especially the guys that are towards the back of the first round. So maybe give John Schneider a bit more slack with this, because there are a lot of other teams that are struggling to find first-round picks that are really living up to that draft slot, and as a result, they're not bringing them back for that fifth year, at least on that fifth year option. The Seahawks are far from the only ones that are doing that. When I return in the second quarter, I'm going to be answering your questions in our weekly Locked On Seahawks mailbag segment. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, Seahawk fans, listen up. Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC, is offering a complimentary bottle to all football fans in America. To get your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, text DRAFT to 231-231. This unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen, which helps boost free testosterone and total testosterone levels and increase energy and lean muscle mass. Nugenix Total T is a great way to increase lean muscle and feel stronger with more energy and endurance. And like the TV ads say, she'll like it too. Plus, text now and they'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help get you back in shape absolutely free. Text DRAFT to 231-231. That's DRAFT to 231-231.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Thanks for listening in for our Wednesday episode. It's time for our weekly Locked On Seahawks mailbag segment. Tons of questions from you, the 12, so let's get to it. First question coming from Chris Phillips tweets, other than KJ Wright and Richard Sherman, are there any free agents still available that you'd like to see the Seahawks sign? At this point, I really feel like the Seahawks have addressed most of the positional issues that they had going into the offseason. Obviously, they went out and they traded for Gabe Jackson. They just drafted Dwayne Eskridge to upgrade their receiving room. They've made a couple big moves along the defensive line to add pass rushers. So I don't feel like there's a lot of holes on this roster, aside from maybe bringing back a player like KJ Wright that is going to be able to come in and obviously give your defense a lift playing that strong side linebacker position. And I still think Richard Sherman, even at this stage of his career, is one of the better corners in football. To me, he would be the number one corner on this team in the short term. So I think both of them make sense. But as far as other players right now that maybe Seattle could consider re-signing, there's another former Seahawk in Sheldon Richardson. They need to replace Jaron Reed. They believe they've got the pieces in place to do that, but I still could see Sheldon Richardson being somebody that can come in. He's in his 30s now, but he's still a very effective player, can play that three-tech role. He can play nose tackle occasionally, is a solid run defender, had a couple sacks last year, had 4.5 sacks the year before. So he's a player that's capable of generating pressure as an interior pass rusher still. I think it would make a lot of sense. And when he left Seattle after the 2017 season, I don't think there was any bad blood there. It was just the Seahawks didn't have any money. They simply could not afford to re-sign him. So I think that they could talk him into coming back to Seattle at the right price here, and it would make some sense. And I would throw Geno Atkins in there as well. He's 33 now, getting to be an older player, didn't have a very productive 2020 season, but you put him back with Carlos Dunlap. They played nearly a decade together in Cincinnati. I think Atkins could still give you another strong season, at least in a rotational reserve role. He could make some sense. He's still available. And I'm going to throw one more name out at edge rush. Even though the Seahawks have signed a number of players there, they brought in Kerry Hyder. They signed Aldon Smith. Aldon Smith is in trouble with the law again, though. So there's a chance that he may not even practice once for the Seahawks. They still might need to find another veteran that can rush the quarterback off the edge. And Melvin Ingram is a really fascinating player that's still out in the market. He's now in his 30s. He's had a few injury issues, but when he is healthy, he is one of the most effective pass rushers out there. And I think he could play that Leo defensive end spot in Seattle's scheme. Even though it's a 4-3 defense, there are a lot of 3-4 principles. He's played in the 3-4 defense for a good chunk of his career with the Chargers. He's a player that I think would be an interesting fit for the Seahawks if Aldon Smith is not going to be able to play. Still have no idea what's going to happen on that front. The Seahawks were not able to provide any updates, so we'll see what happens. But those are three players that I could see making some sense for the Seahawks to consider. I still think KJ Wright and Richard Sherman, though, are the two most notable free agents that would make a lot of sense for the Seahawks, given their positional needs now here in mid-May. Chuck Warner tweets, "Why weren't Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner restructured to add a couple of impact players? If this team is serious about going all in and not being one and done in the playoffs," well, Pete Carroll actually addressed this during the rookie minicamp, and you look at what the Seahawks did. Obviously, they entered this offseason with very little salary cap space. They had just $4 million in effective cap space to work with. They did cut Carlos Dunlap. They eventually re-signed him. That created some financial flexibility for them. They released Jaren Reed. They extended Tyler Lockett and Gabe Jackson after they traded for him. So all of those moves created some cap space. But really, this boiled down to the Seahawks just didn't feel like they needed that much cap space where they had to make a move where they're restructuring Russell Wilson's contract. And I'll try to explain it as simple as I can. The base salary would become a signing bonus if you restructure Russell Wilson, and it can create up to $12 million in cap space. The flip side, though, is that $12 million cap hit gets pushed to 2022 and 2023, which now makes it you have less cap space to work with in future seasons. It's kicking the can down the road, and John Schneider has never been a fan of doing that. He doesn't like short-sighted financial views like that. It's just not the type of move that he does. And so they decided to use avoided years at the end of contracts instead. And that's not something the Seahawks had ever done prior to this year. With the salary cap going down, though, made a lot of sense for them to do that because they were absorbing much smaller dead cap hits in future seasons than they would have if they tried to restructure Russell Wilson or Bobby Wagner. So at the end of the day, they didn't want to absorb that big of cap hits in future seasons, and they felt they had less risky ways that they could create cap space. And so it makes sense. I think there's still a chance they could restructure one of those contracts if the right couple of players are still available, like a Richard Sherman or KJ Wright, and they want to come back to Seattle. I could see the Seahawks still doing it, but I think at this point, it's highly unlikely. And it makes a lot of sense given the moves the Seahawks have made to this point. David Hall tweets, "What is your prediction on who will be the two starting cornerbacks?" This is going to be interesting just because I don't know if the Seahawks are done at that position. I don't know if Richard Sherman is going to come back or not. With him remaining unsigned here in mid-May, it's still a possibility that Sherman could return to Seattle. And I, as I mentioned earlier, still think he would be the number one corner for this team if they signed him. But based on the players that are there right now, I think DJ Reed is going to be one of your starters. He played really well in the second half of the season. And really, he's altered the way the Seahawks address that position, because normally they want really tall, long-armed corners, and DJ Reed is 5'9" with sub-32-inch arms. That is not a guy they've typically wanted to put on the outside, and yet he played really well after they had a number of injuries in front of him last year. So I think DJ Reed starts, and I think the other starter is going to be Akella Witherspoon, who fits more of the prototypical mold of what the Seahawks like at that position. 6'3", really long arms, really athletic player that had an up and down four seasons in San Francisco, but he's a really good scheme fit. And again, he fits more of that prototypical mold they like at that cornerback spot. So I think two former 49ers are going to be starting for the Seahawks. Maybe Sherman ends up being one of those two guys. But for now, I think Witherspoon and Reed are going to be the two starters on the outside. And I think Marquise Blair will be in the slot. Grant tweets, if you had to compare Shane Waldron's offense to a movie, which one would it be and why? This is a great question, Grant, and it's a pretty easy answer for me, though. I'm going to go with Frankenstein and not the more recent crappy ones. I'm talking about the really good black and white Frankenstein movie. I think you're going to see a true mashup here of some of Seattle's prior concepts with some of Sean McVay's principles and formations, with Waldron coming from McVay's system, having been working with him the last 4 years. There's going to be more adaptability. There's going to be plays that complement one another more than what we saw under Brian Schottenheimer and before him, Darrell Bevell. A lot of different looks from a handful of formations. Some of that will be there. But you also have to believe there's going to be some downhill runs that we don't necessarily see in the Rams scheme that the Seahawks have used. Their personnel still fits that on the offensive line. There are going to be shot plays because Russell Wilson has one of the best deep balls in the NFL. They aren't suddenly going to throw five-yard slants every single play. They will still take their shots downfield. So this is not going to be a pure carbon copy of the Rams' offense. They're going to be Frankensteining some concepts they've had with their previous coordinators, with some of the stuff that Shane Waldron wants to do. What I don't know at this point is how much of it's going to be Rams concepts and how much of it's going to be the former ones for the Seahawks. We won't know that until we see things start to come together in training camp and when they're actually on the field playing against other teams. So for now, that's kind of a guessing game. But I expect we're going to see a nice little blend here of what the Seahawks have done in the past and what we've seen the Rams do with Sean McVay. I expect a little bit of both with this new offensive scheme. Damon Jones tweets, can Russ adjust to quick, short timing routes and will pass protection be better? Answering the second part of that question, I do think the pass protection is going to be better just by default, the addition of Gabe Jackson. He has been one of the best pass protecting guards in the NFL since he was drafted by the Raiders back in 2014. Didn't give up a single sack last year to Derek Carr with Las Vegas. So this is a player that is really been consistent in pass protection. I think just his addition alone is going to help this group. I think Ethan Posick will be better than he was in his first year as a starter. I still don't know if he's a long-term guy at the center position, but I expect improvements from him. And Damian Lewis is going to year two, and he was one of the best rookie offensive linemen in the league last year. I expect that he's going to be much better swinging over to the left guard spot. In pass protection, that's where he's got the most room to grow. So that's encouraging for the Seahawks. I like the two tackles that they have in Dwayne Brown and Brandon Shell. I think that the ceiling for this team is being in that top 8 to 10 offensive lines for pass protection. If they're able to do that, then that creates the opportunity for Russell Wilson to be able to make more of those plays downfield. We've seen him excel in the short passing game, but he's been far more inconsistent than I think his coordinators up to this point. That has not been an emphasis for them, in part because he's so darn good at the deep ball. You want to be able to take advantage of that, but when your offensive line's struggling, you can't rely on those 40-plus yard pass plays because your quarterback simply doesn't have time to be able to unload the football and allow those routes to develop. They're going to have to find a way to blend those, and Wilson's got to do a better job getting the ball out of his hands to receivers, especially in the middle of the field. We saw those struggles late last year. That's where he's going to have to show that he's able to make adjustments as a passer. If he can do that, then this offense can get back to where they were playing the first half of the 2020 season and not repeat the dreadful performance they had the last 2 months of last season. David Hershey tweets, do you think Cade Johnson could be the next undrafted free agent receiver to have a lot of success like Doug Baldwin? He's a shifty slot with good hands. Well, I would agree with that assessment. You see him at the Senior Bowl. That's what he is. He's a very shifty player that is a crafty route runner, not the best athlete. And I think that's the reason he ended up going undrafted. Teams were concerned about his overall athletic testing not being where they wanted it to be. But this kid is a gamer. He knows how to run routes. He knows how to get open. And he scored 29 touchdowns in 3 years at South Dakota State. So this is a guy that knows how to find the end zone and score points. And the Seahawks will always value players like that. And so Right now, I still think Cade Johnson's probably the best undrafted free agent signing that they made. I think he's got a chance to not only crack the roster, but maybe even be their number four receiver. He's going to give Freddie Swain a run for his money, and he's going to get his opportunities. And so he's got to get healthy. He didn't play in rookie minicamp, but it sounds like that wasn't a significant injury. He should be ready to go as offseason workouts continue. He is a player with his route running ability, his smarts, his soft hands, his special teams versatility, that I think he does have a chance to be that next undrafted receiver that makes the team. I'm not going to say he's the next Doug Baldwin because, well, Doug Baldwin was a really darn good player, but he's got a chance to at least make the 53 and make an impact. Last question here, coming from Michael tweets, out of all the offensive linemen signed in undrafted free agency, which one do you think has the best chance of making the 53-man roster? Well, there's a few guys here that intrigue me. Jake Kieran, one of the tackles that they signed out of Cal, was a three-year starter for the Golden Bears, and then he had a medical red flag that came up, and that's why he wasn't drafted. But there are some scouts that looked at him as a potential starter at right tackle. I don't think he's athletic enough to play left tackle, but this is a big guy that can move people in the run game. He's underrated in pass protection. I do think that his footwork is going to limit him to the right side, but he might be a name to keep a close eye on. But really, the best undrafted rookie free agent they've got on the offensive line, I think, is the center coming from Canada, Pierre-Olivier Lestage. He is going to be a lot of fun to watch. It's the guy that had an East-West Shrine Game invite, and then unfortunately the game didn't actually happen because of COVID-19, and he also didn't get to have an organized pro day either. So if he would have been able to play last year, didn't get to because of the pandemic, if he would have been able to play, he's probably drafted. And he's a player I know the organization's pretty excited about. He's got the size to play guard or center. So he's going to have an opportunity maybe to compete for one of those backup spots. That's a name to keep an eye on as we get closer to training camp. When I return in the third quarter, continuing our position by position depth chart review coming out of the draft, going to swing to the receiver position. I just talked about Cade Johnson. I'm going to look at some of the other players he's going to be competing against the rest of this offseason, going into training camp, dishing out my wild card of the position, and making a way too early prediction which players will make the final roster. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of the UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Wednesday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, continuing our position-by-position depth chart review, swinging back to the offensive side of the football with the receiver position. When the Seahawks season ended last January, one of the biggest question marks after an early exit in the playoffs revolved around the lack of depth behind DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, 2,000-yard receivers. Metcalf broke Steve Largent's 20-plus-year single-season receiving record. Lockett had 100 receptions, the first player in franchise history to do that. So both those players had phenomenal 2020 seasons. But as the offense sputtered in the final 2 months, it became apparent there is not a third target that really strikes fear in opponents. And nobody really emerged that could take some pressure off of Lockett and Metcalf. That made it much easier for teams to take the two star receivers away. In particular, they were able to heighten their pass rush pressure on Russell Wilson. Seattle couldn't get the downfield passing game going. and nobody else was able to step up to help offset that. So that's why the team was more than happy to use its first draft pick on a receiver, an electric playmaker in Dwayne Eskridge coming from Western Michigan. He can take the top off of a defense. After seeing him this past weekend at the rookie minicamp, I can tell you he has legitimate 4-3 speed. This guy is a blazer. He can create after the catch. Not a big guy, 5'9", around 190 pounds, but he definitely looks like he's got running back build. So he's a difficult guy when he gets a ball in his hands to be able to get to the ground, and that's been a huge problem for the Seahawks for 3 or 4 years. The ability to create after the catch. They badly needed a receiver like that. So Eskridge should be the perfect complement to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. You look at this depth chart as a whole, obviously Metcalf and Lockett are going to be your two starters. And I think Dwayne Eskridge at this point, maybe I'm jumping too early on this, but I think he's the number three receiver when they start the season in week one, playing in Indianapolis against the Colts. I think this kid is going to be ready to contribute right away. And some of you that are listening might be like, I hope so. He's a 24-year-old rookie, but he is going to be able to step in, I think, and play week one, significant snaps, the number three receiver. And I think Freddie Swain is going to settle in as the number four guy. He had a really solid rookie season with 13 receptions, not bad for a sixth round pick, a player that showed the ability to win downfield a little bit. He's a savvy route runner. He can run routes from the outside in the slot. So I think Freddie Swain's the number four guy. And from there, that's when it gets really interesting. And it really, to me, it's anyone's guess who else is going to make this roster. But you look at the rest of the players at the receiver position. Cody Thompson was really one of the stars early in training camp last year. He's got good size at 6'2". Then he gets hurt during the second week of training camp. He missed about a week and a half. And when you're a guy fighting for one of the final roster spots, you simply can't have that happen. And so he ended up playing the entire year on the practice squad, didn't make the opening roster. Penny Hart actually ended up being their number five receiver. He beat out John Ursua for that job. Ursua's inability to play in special teams continues to hurt him. This is a guy that was one of the most productive players in college football a few years ago. And he is a really good route runner from the slot. He has underrated athleticism and speed, but he hasn't been able to get on the field. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that if you're a bottom of the depth chart guy at receiver, you better be able to play special teams. And he, quite frankly, has not brought anything to the table in that regard. He's not a dynamic return man. He's not going to go down and make tackles as a punt and kick coverage person. So this is not a guy that has offered that flexibility. And I think that's the big reason he's been stuck in the practice squad. He's a guy that's got some talent on offense, but he's not good enough to beat out some of the top receivers. So he better be able to play special teams. That's been an issue. Penny Hart made a couple tackles on kick coverage last year. So that was a big advantage for him in that competition and why he ended up playing in 13 games for the Seahawks in 2020. That special teams flexibility was critical for him. Aaron Fuller, former receiver out of Washington, he also spent the entire year on the practice squad. He had a much better than expected training camp last year, and he played really well in the mock scrimmages. So maybe he's a name to keep an eye on. They also re-signed Darvin Kidzey, who was on the practice squad for a few weeks last year. I would think he's probably the biggest long shot from this group, especially when you consider they brought in three really good undrafted free agent receivers. I talked about Cade Johnson during the mailbag segment, one of the most prolific receivers in the FCS division, playing for the South Dakota State Jackrabbits, a bunch of touchdowns, a bunch of yardage, really good week at the Senior Bowl as well. To me, he has the best shot at earning that number five, maybe even number four position on the receiver depth chart. Tamorian Terry from Florida State, bigger player, a much different skill set. He's 6'3", around 207 pounds, long arms, likes to go up and win jump balls, had over 1,000 receiving yards at Florida State 2 years ago, but his last season with the Seminoles, he had a bunch of issues with drops, battled some injuries. That's the big reason why he went undrafted, but he's certainly got the size and athleticism to be a sleeper going into training camp. Maybe he ends up being the next Malik Turner, ends up playing his way into a roster spot, and maybe the biggest sleeper here, going to my wild card, Connor Weddington, who played at Sumner High School near Tacoma. So this is a local kid that's getting the opportunity to play for a team that he's rooted for most of his life. He's been a Seahawks fan for a long time. Now he gets to play for them. And he was a running back at the high school level. This is a player that the Seahawks should be able to move around quite a bit. They did this at rookie minicamp. He lined up in the backfield a few times. He was in the slot. They put him on the outside. You can move him all over the place. Really athletic kid. great head on his shoulders, obviously going to Stanford, has a degree from Stanford. So really smart, high IQ player that I think has a fighting chance to make this team as well. Biggest reason why is he was a dynamic kick and punt returner for the Cardinal. So if that's able to translate to the NFL, that's an area the Seahawks have needed an upgrade is on special teams. They don't want Tyler Lockett returning kicks anymore. Maybe Connor Weddington becomes that guy that can take over as your new kick and punt return specialist, and he can play some snaps for you on offense, both at receiver and as like a third down running back gadget type player. That type of versatility is going to serve him well. Right now, I would say he's on the outside looking in, but I was really impressed with what I saw at rookie minicamp, and he's a player that certainly now is on my radar. Kate Johnson, you better get back healthy so that you can get some reps out there and solidify your standing here during off-season workouts. As far as my picks for the final 53, you know, maybe this is a surprise to some of you that are listening, but I think DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett will make this roster. They will be your two starters. And then I think Dwayne Eskridge is the number three guy, Freddie Swain behind him. And I've got Cade Johnson winning that fifth spot because he can play special teams. He can play on the outside and the slot. I think he edges out Tamori and Terry and Connor Weddington for that last spot. Maybe Penny Hart's in the mix there as well. And a number of these guys have a chance to be retained on the practice squad. But I think Cade Johnson gets that fifth and final receiver spot for the Seahawks heading into week one for that season opener against the Colts. Make sure to check out the Locked On Today podcast hosted by Peter Bukowski. He updates you on all the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on our Thursday show, I'll have a special guest host jumping on, and we'll be ranking each and every quarterback on Seattle's upcoming 2020 schedule. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.